Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to Get Focused Radio, a show designed to help you refocus when life gets in the way. It is Thursday, May 17th, and I'm your host, Kate Hennessy, coming to you live from beautiful historical downtown Bowmanville, Ontario. Please be sure to check out my website at getfocusedradio.com. I have a lot of things to share and many upcoming events. Now every Thursday at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, my show Get Focused will be featured weekly here on blogtalkradio.com. The topic of our show today is I've Lived with my special guest, Jerry Vanier. Jerry has recently written a book called I've Lived, and I had the pleasure of meeting Jerry about a week ago at Chapters, where he was doing a book signing of this very first book. His book is all about recovery to discovery, and it's a collection of life lessons and findings discovered by Jerry on his own 15-year journey from the recovery of alcoholism and bipolar affliction to discovering what life is really all about, learning to be happy. In this first book, he describes his life revelations from A to Z, covering topics like awareness all the way to zeroing in, and relates to some experiences in his own life prior to recovery in order to show how different his way of thinking was then compared to now. Jerry, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kate. I'm glad to be here.
Now, before we get started with my questions to you, I want to share with our listeners our call-in number so that they can have the opportunity to call in with their questions. If you'd like to call in and speak with Jerry or myself, the number is 646-200-3268 and press 1 to speak to our guest. So like I said, I met Jerry only about a week and a half ago, and Jerry, I've just finished the book, and you and I just discussed last night, it is an easy read, but I don't want to take away the fact that it's a very in-depth book. You don't get into the nastiness of addiction. And I found that very refreshing. But you really, really have a lot of things to tell people about. What motivated you to write this book?
Well, after living 58 years of what I can call a chaotic life, and a life in which I very often had no internal direction, also I reached a point in my life where on the outside I looked to be quite successful, but I was being eaten away on the inside. I had lost my reason to live, and therefore, ultimately, I had to take steps to change. I did so. I had some fabulous people in my life that were able to lead me along and help me reach a good point. Now, having been in a lovely state of living for about 13 years, I came to a decision I could no longer hold all the wonderful things that happened to me to myself, and therefore, I sat down to write this book.
Okay. And can you tell us how young you are?
I'm 74 years young. And to me, age is simply a number on a calendar.
Well, I have to tell people because they can't see you. You are one of the best looking, most vivacious, lovely men. And I said to you last night, I want to have whatever you have because it's better than Botox. Whatever you've got, if you could bottle that, that would be amazing. And if people have a chance, I can only assume that the last 13 years of sobriety, I mean, you're healthy, you're just a ball of fire. But tell us a little bit about what life was like before that, and when did this addiction begin for you?
Well, I really can't say when it began. As many addictions, they just kind of, you grow into them. But I did live a life which actually was a life of fear for most of my life. And this fear drove me to do many things. And as I said before, it even drove me to work extremely hard and become somewhat successful. There are good sides to fear. Unfortunately, in my case, I let it go too far ahead, and then it caused a chaotic life. I won't go through all of the episodes, of course, because that would take more than a book to write. But I can tell you that I lived in a constant state of dread. My nights and evenings were terrible. There was only my bottle and me in the living room, sitting in an easy chair. I needed the booze to run away. You see, in my case, Kate, booze was not my problem. It was my solution. I had to run away from life, and it allowed me to do that and create my own fantasies. A terrible place to live.
Oh, I can only imagine. Now you have been married to the same woman, Dorothy. Hello, Dorothy, if you're listening to us. 48 years. That in itself is amazing. When you've gone through all of that, what you've been through, that she stuck by you. Because I would think that that would be a very difficult life for everyone around you.
Amazing is the right word. She is an amazing person. Because remember, for the first 33 years of our marriage, I was in that drinking stage. And in various stages, good, bad, and indifferent. But she did learn how to cope. She learned how to put up with it. She contributed to having our three children grow up properly, get a decent education, and become good society people. And although I did play a part as a father, because, you know, during that period of time, I wasn't all bad, as we like to think, and therefore, but her contribution was tremendous, and I do thank her on a regular basis.
Now, who did you write this book for?
Well, originally it didn't even start out as a book. It started by putting some notes down on paper, and as I did so, they started to take some form. Certainly the decision came in someplace, yeah, who am I writing this for? Originally, I was writing it for myself so I could kind of use it for introspection. As it came along, by the way, I had a very fine man, Paul Welsby, who is a professor at Durham College, who gave the review of about my first 40 pages. In doing so, he sent me an email back, and he literally told me there was a book there that had to be written. That gave me the hope of being able to go through with it. Then it became, why am I writing this? And ultimately the answer was, it was these things inside me that had to be shared. I was the recipient of these things, and I had a responsibility to make sure they could be sent and given the message to other people so they might even reach this beautiful point of happiness, freedom, and joy that I have.
Yeah, yeah. And how did you come up with the title, I've Lived?
The title is a story all in itself. In the writing, of course, about halfway through the book, I knew it was going to have to be named and titled. And therefore, I started writing a number of titles on a piece of paper, maybe approximately 30 of them. And then I worked through a process of elimination and getting them through. Every time I scratched them out on a new piece of paper, that title kept on showing up. That told me something. And then ultimately what happened is my wonderful son, Chris, who is a wizard on the computer, said, Dad, can I take this home? I said, yes. So he took it back to his home, and he played with it, came back 3 days later, and he showed me the title. And if you look at the book, you will see it's a visual thing as well. He put the I've in the middle and the L and the D on the end. And he said, what do you think of this? That became the title of the book.
Yeah, it's perfect, and it's a great looking book too. The front, very very nice. Can you tell me? There's a part in here that I read, and it just stayed with me. I'm going to read this. You said, for most of my life, I lived in the world of dreams and nightmares taught to me in my childhood. As an adult, I believed in the dream world of my youth. I never grew up. I believed all the stories of life and lived in the chaos that continuously surrounded me. I felt like a victim without any control or ability to improve my existence. That is a depressed person. That is depression. And do you find, is that all part of an addiction? Is depression part of all of this? And what was so depressing? I think sometimes people go, what was so depressing about your life? You have a wonderful wife, you have great children, you've got a job, you know, you have a home. What is it that is depressing? You know, for some people, they don't get it. Like, why?
Well, Kate, in my case, I believe it's because I never could live up to my own expectations of myself. My ego was out of control, and I continuously had to strive and perform to be something that I probably couldn't even be. And that was a very frustrating position to be in life. Now, let me also state very quickly, I'm not quite sure that I drank because I was depressed or that I was depressed because I drank. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there is a fine line there. Yeah, and there's a fine line between those things. My bipolarism is still there and will be until I die. But today it's controllable. By the way, I have not had to take a pill in the last 10 years. I do not need medication, and I can manage it reasonably well only because of being in this beautiful, serene, sober state that I have.
Okay. Now I have heard that usually bipolar is not an easy thing to determine, right? There, when you go to a doctor and they've got to do a lot of tests to find out what it is that you have. I have read that usually people who have an addiction are also bipolar. They usually go hand in hand. Have you heard that?
Very much so, and in fact, I've lived that, and I know of what you speak. Today, and I'm not trying to be judgmental, but we do live in a society where bipolar disorder is becoming more prevalent, and that might be because of the pressures that are put on us as small children. Most of our problems do start in childhood when the rearing starts taking place. I'm not blaming the parents. I'm simply saying that in society, that's the way it works. And, of course, in my case, because of this lack of self-esteem that I had to go to an addiction. In my case, it was alcohol. In some other people, it's other drugs. It's hard drugs. Some, it's prescription drugs. We all try to look for a place to land.
Would you say that this self-esteem issue started right from when you were young, from when, as you were growing up? This came from your parents?
Without a doubt, and in fact, I do talk about it in my book, that from very, very young age, I suffered from this belief that I would be abandoned. So you imagine a five-year-old kid thinks that his mom and dad are going to walk out on him. That wasn't going to happen. They never told me that, but that's where my mind went. And because of that, then, of course, it escalated into other fears and things as life went on, as it does with most of us. And
of course.
Again, go ahead.
I was just going to say, how has the book affected or changed your life?
Well, the biggest change that it has made is in myself and in my heart, in that today I can look at myself as a very different person than I used to be. And in fact, mentally and emotionally, I am. I'm in a good place today. By the way, jokingly, it has also changed me in that since I started writing that book, I've learned to develop a blog. I've learned how to use a keyboard on the computer. I have Facebook, and I'm doing things that I never thought in my life that I would be able to do. And my children in their 40s are always amazed at what I've been able to learn electronically.
Very impressed at 74 that you're online. In fact, you and I had a panic because you had to use the cell phone today, but so far, so good. Now, who do you want to thank? Like, who do you have to thank for getting to where you are? Other than, of course, you know, yourself. I mean, you've done this yourself. You decided 13 years ago that you were going to change. So before you tell me who you're going to thank, tell me what was it 13 years ago? Like, what was the moment? Because everyone that I've ever spoken to that's had an addiction, be it with alcohol or drugs, they have those moments where, you know, we all do. I'm going to wake up on Monday. I'm going to start my diet. And we all fall off that wagon real fast.
Yep.
You said 13 years ago, I've had enough. Why? Like, what was that moment, and how did you stay on the wagon, so to speak?
Okay, I do mention that as well in my book in the second chapter where I talk about what happened. And literally what happened was I had reached a stage where constantly every night I would start drinking at approximately 3 in the afternoon. I would drink through until midnight or 1 o'clock or whenever I flamed out, as they say. And I had a constant mantra, And it was, wouldn't it be nice if I wouldn't wake up tomorrow morning? I had reached a point where I was literally committing suicide mentally. Mm-hmm. And when I reached that point, there was a wake up. There was a little spark that came into my head and said, it can't continue this way. I have to do something. And that decision to want having to do something is what changed my whole life.
Now, when you're going through all of this period of time, this addiction, you say you'd sit on your own. I do know that a lot of people who have this these issues have friends. They have the friends that support them, right? You don't really want to hang around people who don't drink if you want to drink. So you have that. Did you have that? Did you have to make a change with friends? And
yes, I did. In fact, what happened is that we all have a way of wanting to be with our own kind. And therefore, during my first 58 years, I associated with other people of my ilk, those who did enjoy going to parties. And it was only in the last few years that I was isolating drinking. And before that, I was quite a social drinker. And I found myself in many places and bars and places where I could drink. And of course, all of the like me were there, and we supported each other. We just told each other how great we were. Wasn't it nice to be with somebody who could tell me I was great? And needless to say, though, I did reach that point where I no longer was a social drinker. I became a lone drinker. And that's where the isolation, the being alone, the depression, all those terrible things were there. And again, it was a terrible place to live. So today I have a wonderful circle of friends. And again, I find myself with people who are of like kind. We support each other. And today, instead of telling how great we are, we listen to each other's problems. We allow our hearts to touch each other. I'm continuously blessed with having beautiful people in my life that help me live and help me over the lumps. Because don't forget, I still have problems.
Yeah.
I'm human after all. But these people help me. It's a beautiful place to be. Yes.
Now, did you have any, with that excess of drinking, did you have any physical damage at all?
Well, I was fortunate in that I really didn't abuse myself to the degree where I developed heart problems or liver problems, as with some alcoholics we do. But I certainly didn't take care of myself very well. I didn't go to doctors and checkups. So therefore, today, I live with the residual of not having taken care of myself. And I do have problems such as arthritis and various things in my body that had I taken care of myself a little, I'm sure I'd be better. Someone did say that one time. They said, if I knew I was going to live this long, I would have taken better care of myself.
It's true. Now, what does your family think of the book? You know, because you're airing out, you know, that's kind of airing out a bit of dirty laundry. Did you have to talk to them first before you wrote it?
Actually, no, not first. I talked to them as I was going through the experience. And I must admit, they're all very level-headed people. And I guess they just accepted it for what it was. They supported me throughout. My son Chris, as I said before, about helping do the cover, and my daughter, beautiful daughter Sharon, my son Michael, who also have continued to support me and help me through and buoy me up in those days when I was just about ready to tear the manuscript up. So I don't really know. I'm going to assume that they're proud of me, and I'm not quite sure what that means.
Okay. Well, they can go to your blog or your Facebook and tell you what they think. Because you know how
Absolutely.
To access that now. Okay.
This is true.
What was your greatest?
You got it.
What was your greatest challenge in writing the book?
Well, actually, at the beginning, it was the challenge of making the decision. I never thought that I had the wherewithal, the command of the English language, the ability to put sentences together, to do the technical work that had to be done to bring it so that at least it could be edited. Strangely enough, these things did happen. I consider that a gift. I still come back to the point that I believe that book was meant to be written, and I was given the tools that I was able to work my way through. So the challenges were a little bit exciting, as we might think.
Now, what kind of feedback have you gotten from this, from people who've known you? You must know people that have been with you for a long time, maybe some of even the people who were part of your social circle back in the day. Has anyone got back to you? Has this changed any of the people that you knew?
Well, yes, Kate. In fact, we've had some brisk sales just out of the back trunk of my car, and many people have read it.
Yeah.
I've received some fabulous feedback verbally with meeting people face-to-face. I've had some feedback of people who came to my email address, which I had listed in the book, and they've also come on the blog. And if you go to the blog I've Lived, you will not only see my posting, you will see an area called Discussion. And there are people who have left messages and thoughts of what they thought of the book. The feedback has been very positive, and in fact, it continues to support the reason why I wrote the book.
Now, are you available if people wanted you to come out and speak with their group, or you know, talk even to schools and whatnot? You'd be available for that?
I certainly would be. Yes, in fact, it would be my pleasure, and I consider it an honor to be able to go and express myself and express what has happened with me again, in the hope that it can be a benefit to somebody else.
I would think that something like this, the fact that, you know, you are 74 years old, you've been married to the same woman for 48 years, and you've overcome such adversity and come out, you know, the other side so positive, this would be something that we should get out to the kids, you know, because right now with the social media, our children are growing up in such a focused, everything is all about how you look, who you are, what you wear, and, you know, very, very difficult time for them. And we can see that the addictions that our children are facing at a much earlier age, they're all starting things so much earlier. And it has a lot to do with self-esteem. And that seems to be a huge focus in your book, is that the lack of self-esteem. And of course, especially the younger a younger person is going to turn to something to help, be it alcohol, drugs, or whatever.
You're putting a finger on something that's very important. In fact, I have read some articles and statistics prove that there is a very high incidence of depression in, believe it or not, children under 11 years old. There are some plans that doctors have today that actually target children under 11 years old. Kids that should be out playing and enjoying themselves are isolating in their rooms and afraid to go because they don't fit the mold that the magazines and other media are trying to sell them. That's a sad state of affairs.
Yeah.
And it
yeah.
can be changed.
Well, no, tell me on a lighter note, what makes your feet touch the floor in the morning?
Well, that is a great question. And literally, it's just a matter of my looking at life in the fashion that I do. Now, every night when I go to bed, I do pray and thank that I had the day that I had. And usually it is a good one. And I simply pray to be able to continue the same things on in the day. When I get up in the morning, that comes to mind very quickly. And therefore, I realize that as long as I do what I did yesterday and do them as well as I can and work with my heart the way I should, I know it's going to be a good day. And you know, when I already know it's going to be a good day, it is not hard to have my feet touch the floor.
What's the central message of the book? What's the main thing that you want to get out to everyone that's listening, and hopefully everyone is going to read this book? What are we going to get? What's the central message that you want?
I think it's twofold. One, it is that anything we wish to accomplish is possible if we have the desire, if we have the willingness. And that comes out quite well in the book. The other is what I try to do every day in my life is I want to live happy, joyous, and free. And those three words are key. And hopefully will people will realize we do have that opportunity. We can do it if we want. We can live happy, joyous, and free.
Jerry, what do you do when you're not writing?
Well, I still work. I work at Durham College.
Oh, you do?
I'm in security there.
Okay.
I'm in security. I've been there for a number of years at both at the Whitby campus and the main campus in Oshawa. And I enjoy working there. I really don't consider it work because I deal daily with wonderful staff, great teachers, and many wonderful students. And those guys and girls between 18 and 25, they keep me young. That's
perhaps why. They must have been impressed with this book.
Actually, they were. And a number of people bought it. Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah, it felt good.
Is there another book in Jerry Vanier?
At the moment, I can't say except that I have noticed lately I do walk around with a pen in my pocket and a pad, and I do on a regular basis put some notes in on the pad. That tells me that maybe there's a reason why I'm doing that. I'm not quite convinced, but I'm working on it.
Jerry, where can we get your book, and tell us a website to go to?
Okay, the places where you can buy the book presently is at Chapters at the Oshawa Center. It is also available at the Blue Heron in Uxbridge. Very shortly, it will be available on Amazon and on Kobo. We're just in the midst of setting that up. It's about 3 weeks to a month to get it done, but in time it will be, and you'll be able to buy it online. Should you wish any information, you can go to our blog, which is ivelived.com. And the rest of the information is on the last page of the book, and it does have the email address and things where you can contact me.
Perfect. Okay. I just want to say thank you, Jerry. I'm going to let you finish us up. I want you to give me a parting thought in 1 second. I just want to make sure to let our viewers know that I will be speaking with Mary McDonough. She is an author, and she's also probably best known as Erin Walton on The Waltons, in my upcoming episode on June 14th at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on GetFocusedRadio.com. We'll be talking about her book called Lessons from the Mountain, What I Learned from Erin Walton. That brings our show to a close for this week. On behalf of my guest, Jerry Vanier, and myself, Kate Hennessy, I'm wishing everyone a great week full of smiles and warm thoughts. And Jerry, can you let us go on a parting thought for today?
Yes, first of all, thank you so much for having me, Kate. And I would like to leave you with this thought, if I may. Many years ago, I was taught the words faith, hope, and charity. They never meant very much to me in my life. I've learned, of course, charity is just another word for love. And today, I interpret those three words in this way. Faith is I believe, hope is I trust, and love is I care. And the greatest of these is love. Love others, love life, and most importantly, love yourself.
Jerry, from the bottom of my heart, thank you. It's been a pleasure to meet you and read your book, and I hope that we will speak. I know we will in the future. Take care, everyone.
Okay.
Have a great week. See you later.